I want you to start by solving a really simple math problem in your head. Ready? 3 times 6.
I mean, obviously it's 18.
Right, it's 18. You didn't even have to think about it. But if you look at how the device, you know, the phone or laptop you're listening to this on right now, solves that exact same problem, it's a completely different story.
Yeah, it is. It's actually executing this tiny microscopic recipe
Yeah.
of shifting data around and adding bits together.
Exactly. But what if a computer didn't actually calculate that answer through a sequence of steps? What if instead it just like fell into
Oh, I love that description.
it?
Like rolling a marble down a carefully shaped hill.
Yes, and it naturally just comes to rest in a little divot marked 18. Welcome to this deep dive, everyone. Today's mission is unpacking a genuinely fascinating piece of source material. It details something called the XYFELLOW, or ODECCT paradigm.
Which, if you follow processor architecture at all, you know we're always hitting these physical limits. But this text proposes a completely new theory for designing the ALU.
Right, the arithmetic logic unit, basically the core math engine of a processor. And it proposes a way to do multiplication with the absolute theoretical minimum number of operations.
And that is an incredibly high-stakes claim to making computer science.
Yeah.
I mean, if we are talking about changing the fundamental building blocks of how processors do math, we're exploring a potential revolution in hardware here.
We really are. It's about taking a totally different philosophical approach to hardware design, one that could honestly rewrite the foundational rules of computing that we've relied on since, well, the invention of the microchip.
Yeah, it completely flips the script. We are so conditioned to the idea of a processor executing a sequential list of instructions, one after another, like a chef following a cookbook.
Right, step one, step two.
Exactly. To suddenly suggest that we can just use the physical shape of the hardware's coordinate space to do the work, it's mind-bending.
When I first read this text, I actually had to go back and reread the core premise like 3 times because it sounds almost like science fiction.
It really does. Ditching traditional instructions entirely and turning math into geometry.
But to truly understand why this new two-stage method is so groundbreaking and why it drastically reduces operations, we have to start with the baseline. We need to define what our current processors are doing wrong, or, why they're hitting an efficiency wall.
Right.
So, how does a state-of-the-art processor handle 3 times 6 right now?
Well, in standard digital design, multiplication is not a single instantaneous event. It's treated as a sequence of discrete steps. Specifically, it uses an algorithm based on shifts and adds.
Shifts and adds.
Yeah. Since computers operate in binary ones and zeros, multiplying 3 by 6 means the processor takes the binary representation of those numbers, shifts the bits to the left, which essentially multiplies by 2 in binary, and then adds those results together.
So it's a literal step-by-step process. Shift the bits, add them up, shift them again, add them again.
Exactly. And in computer science, this sequential complexity is denoted as taking O log n operations. So the larger the numbers you are multiplying, the more of these shift and add operations you have to string together. For 3 times 6, even in a highly optimized traditional ALU, you are looking at a minimum of 2 distinct sequential operations just to get the answer.
A shift and then an add.
Yes, that requires time, it requires electrical power, and crucially, it requires the processor's clock to actually cycle through those steps in order.
Okay, let's unpack this for everyone, because this is where the XYFLW paradigm steps in and basically flips the table over. The source text states that in this new paradigm, the ALU is no longer a sequential instruction processor.
Right, it becomes something totally different.
It says it becomes a discrete sampler of a continuous vector field. Now, I have to pause here. That is some dense academic jargon. A continuous vector field. Are you saying we aren't trying to minimize clock cycles anymore?
That is exactly right, and it's the core distinction you really have to grasp here. Historically, when chip designers talk about making a computer faster, they are talking about clock cycles.
Like gigahertz.
Exactly. How many sequential steps can we cram into one pick of the processor's clock? Or just how fast can we make that clock tick? But XYFLOW completely abandons that metric.
Wow.
Yeah. The goal here is minimizing the number of elementary vector field evaluations. In practical engineering terms, we want to minimize the actual arithmetic FLO piece.
The floating point operations, the heavy computational lifting.
Precisely. So the goal isn't to speed up the recipe. It's to change the recipe so drastically that the steps themselves just disappear.
Okay, so how does it do that?
The system accomplishes this through a very specific two-layer or two-stage method. To solve 3 times 6, it doesn't crunch the numbers directly. It breaks the problem into an intermediate state.
An intermediate state? What does that mean?
It takes the inputs of 3 and 6, mm-hmm. and it first transforms them into the numbers 20 and negative 2.
Okay, which immediately raises a red flag for me. I mean, breaking 3 times 6 into 20 and negative 2, that sounds like a massive detour.
It does seem counterintuitive at first.
Right. It feels like we just added extra complicated steps to a very simple problem. Why those numbers? And how does introducing this weird intermediate state actually save us operations?
Well, this brings us to layer one of the two-stage method. And it is the mechanism that honestly feels like magic the first time you encounter it. Converting the input of 3 and 6 into that intermediate state of 20 and negative 2 takes exactly zero arithmetic operations.
Wait. Zero.
It costs absolutely zero FLOPs.
Okay, zero computation. So the machine isn't actually doing math in that first step.
Not in the traditional sense, no.
Let me try to describe the theory behind this geometric projection for beginners, because this is wild. Picture a physical landscape. If I have a giant sculpted topographical map and I drop a marble at the specific starting coordinates of 3 on the x-axis and 6 on the y-axis.
I love this analogy.
Right, so the ground is physically shaped in such a way that the marble naturally rolls down the slope and settles into a divot located at the coordinates 20 and negative 2.
That analogy perfectly captures what the source text calls geometric projection. In this theoretical landscape, that sculpted topography is what the text refers to as a piecewise constant attractor.
Piecewise constant attractor.
Yes. And that specific divot where the marble settles, that is the attractor basin.
But let me push back on this, just for you listening who might be wondering the same thing. Gravity works great for marbles on a hill. There is no gravity inside a silicon processor.
True.
So how does a topographical map actually translate to a microchip?
It translates through voltage and physical resistance. Instead of gravity pulling a marble, you have the physical voltage of the electrical current flowing through paths of least electrical resistance in the logic gates.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the hardware is physically structured so that when an electrical signal hits the input nodes for 3 and 6, the natural flow of the circuit's topography instantly routes that voltage to the nodes representing 20 and negative 2.
Okay, but if we are just routing voltage to predetermined nodes, isn't this just a massive lookup table?
I was waiting for you to ask that.
Because if the chip is just memorizing that 3 and 6 map to 20 and negative 2, and it has to do that for every single math problem in existence, wouldn't a 64-bit processor need a physical memory bank the size of a city block just to store all the answers? I mean, how is this practical?
That is the exact trap most people fall into when they first hear about this. It sounds like a naive lookup table, like a giant dictionary of memorized answers.
Right.
But it is not. If it were a naive lookup table for 64-bit multiplication, you'd need an astronomical amount of memory, like more atoms than exist in the universe.
So how does it avoid that?
XYFLOW solves the scaling problem because it doesn't store discrete answers. It defines a continuous function approximation.
Unpack that a bit.
It folds the mathematics into the silicon by exploiting symmetries and topology. It creates a continuous vector field, meaning it defines the slopes and gradients that guide the current rather than hard coding every single possible destination.
So it's compressing the space.
Exactly. It maps the inputs onto a higher dimensional topological surface, where a complex operation, like multiplication, is geometrically resolved into a simpler intermediate state.
I see.
The numbers 20 and negative 2 are simply the specific voltage nodes that this specific geometric manifold projects onto for the inputs of 3 and 6.
So it's not a dictionary of answers. It's a physical terrain that naturally forces any input into a simplified structural state.
You got it. The spatial structure of the ALU's phase space is intricately designed so that when the current hits the inputs, it is instantly geometrically projected to that intermediate state.
Zero operation.
Zero arithmetic cost. It's purely spatial projection.
Okay, just to lock this in for the listeners, in traditional computing, we spend operations shifting bits around to set up the math. In XYFLOW, layer one sets up the math for free, entirely through the microscopic physical layout of the chip.
That's the paradigm shift right there.
The voltage has now settled into the nodes for 20 and negative 2. But the answer to 3 times 6 is 18. We aren't done yet.
No, we still need the final answer.
How do we get from 20 and negative 2 to 18? And why does the source claim this represents the absolute theoretical limit of computing efficiency?
This moves us into layer 2, which the text defines as linear accumulation. Our intermediate state is resting at 20 and negative 2.
Right.
The second layer applies a simple gradient flow to reach the final fixed point. In practical hardware terms, this means the system takes those two intermediate numbers and adds them together. 20 plus negative 2 equals 18.
So that is one addition.
Yes, one single addition. That costs exactly one arithmetic operation.
Okay, let's do the math on the math.
Layer 1 costs us zero operations because it was purely geometric projection.
Mm-hmm.
Layer 2 costs us one operation to sum the projected values. The total number of arithmetic operations to multiply 3 by 6 in this paradigm is exactly 1.
I have to challenge this, though, because my immediate thought when reading the paper was, wait a minute.
What's the catch?
Yeah. If we can do layer 1 with 0 operations just by shaping the geometry of the chip, why can't we just do the whole thing in 0 operations?
It's a great question.
Why couldn't the physical landscape just be shaped so the current flows all the way to 18 right from the start? Why is one operation the magic number?
It's a fundamental question. And the source material provides a rigorous information theory proof to explain exactly why 0 operations is impossible for the total process.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Think about it from a data perspective. You are trying to combine two independent input values, the 3 and the 6, into a brand new third value that is dependent on both of them.
Right, 18.
To do that, you must perform at least one binary operation that mixes those data streams together.
Oh, because if you didn't mix them, you'd essentially just be passing the original data straight through.
Right. Look at our intermediate state, 20 and negative 2. If the hardware doesn't perform at least one active operation to combine them, your output would only reflect one of those inputs.
You'd just output 20, or you'd just output negative 2.
Exactly. Neither of which is 18. Therefore, mathematically and theoretically, one operation is the absolute asymptotical lower bound for combining two non-zero independent values. You literally cannot do it in less than one computational step without losing the informational relationship between the inputs.
So by using physical geometry to do the complex setup for free, and then using a single simple addition to combine the result, XYVL load you hits the theoretical rock bottom limit of mathematics.
It does. It reduces the operation count by 50% compared to a traditional shift and add approach for this specific input.
And scaling that up to a processor doing billions of calculations a second, I mean, the energy and heat savings would be monumental.
The efficiency gains are massive. But, you know, efficiency doesn't matter if the answer is wrong.
That is a very fair point.
And when you start dealing with physical topologies, continuous vector fields, and gradient flows, you are brushing up against the kind of architecture we use in machine learning and neural networks.
Right. And neural networks are notorious for being approximation engines. They get you incredibly close to the right answer, but they aren't always 100% exact.
Which is fine for generating an image, but not for core math.
Exactly. When we're talking about an ALU doing core math, 3 times 6 has to be exactly 18 every single time. So is this two-stage geometric method actually accurate?
It is perfectly accurate, and this is where the ODE-CCT part of the paradigm really shines. The source explains that the input of 3 and 6 actually lies exactly on what they call a boundary surface.
A boundary surface. Let's ground that. What does hitting a boundary actually look like in a physical processor?
Well, think about a bit carry cascade. It's like rolling over a physical car odometer from 999 to 1,000.
Oh, where every single mechanical gear has to turn all at once.
Exactly. In a silicon processor, if you are doing a complex multiplication that causes a massive string of ones to all flip to zero simultaneously, you get a ripple effect.
That sounds like a bottleneck.
It is. It requires complex conditional branches. Basically, VIF and decisions made by the hardware. That creates physical heat, and it creates propagation delay, meaning the processor actually has to wait for the ripple to finish before moving to the next step.
So it's an unstable, jagged terrain for the hardware to navigate. So instead of trying to calculate our way through that messy boundary, this new paradigm essentially teleports past it.
That structural bypass is exactly what's happening. By embedding the 20 and negative 2 intermediate result into layer 1's static pre-computed spatial landscape, the electrical trajectory completely bypasses that unstable boundary region.
Wow.
You don't have to navigate the bit carry cascade. You have structurally eliminated the boundary before the calculation even begins.
The electrical current never even encounters the rough terrain. It is physically routed into the safe zone.
Precisely. And because the rough terrain is bypassed, there are no conditional branches required. There are no if and logic gates that the processor has to stop and evaluate.
That saves so much time.
And there are no loop carry dependencies, where step 3 has to wait for step 2 to finish. Layer 2's single addition relies on deterministic ODE integration. ODE stands for ordinary differential equation.
Okay.
Unlike a neural network that guesses, this process is deterministic. The final fixed point of 18 is reached with absolute machine precision.
So it's not guessing at all.
Not at all. The vector field acts as a perfect integrator for linear sums. It is not an approximation. It is structurally exact.
You're taking a process that is traditionally jagged, sequential, and honestly prone to physical bottlenecks, and turning it into something smooth, continuous, and near instant.
Which is a beautiful way to think about it.
Which brings up the ultimate question regarding the future of compute. We've solved 3 × 6. But what does this two-stage method mean for the broader landscape of technology? How does this approach change the design of future processors?
If you zoom out and look at the bigger picture, this two-layer ALU is really a microcosm of the entire XYFLW philosophy.
Okay, how so?
The central thesis of the source material can be synthesized into one major shift. Complexity is being moved from the dimension of time into the dimension of space.
Time to space?
Yes. We are moving complexity out of the sequential instruction sequence and placing it directly into the geometry of the coordinate space.
Think about what that means for a computer chip, for those of you listening. Right now, if I want my computer to render a 4K video, I send it millions of instructions or opcodes. The computer decodes those opcodes and runs a blistering sequence of mathematical steps.
Right.
But in a future XYFLW processor, decoding an instruction wouldn't mean triggering a sequence of math steps at all.
No, it wouldn't. Decoding an instruction would simply mean choosing your starting coordinate on the physical map.
It's just picking where to drop the electrical current.
Exactly. Every single instruction your computer could ever run would correspond to a different attractor basin on this incredibly complex microscopic landscape.
That is wild.
Layer 1 provides a vast static physical topology that encodes all of these complex mathematical relationships purely as physical coordinate shifts.
And that step costs zero runtime operations.
Correct. Then layer 2 provides the dynamic flow, resolving whatever linear combination is left in a single simple sum. The physical hardware itself becomes a manifestation of the answers.
There is an analogy in the text that captures this perfectly. The author compares this new paradigm to an electron moving in an orbital.
Yes, I was hoping you'd bring that up.
Because when an electron moves around an atom, it isn't pulling out a tiny calculator and computing its trajectory. It's just traversing the space using the path of least physical resistance.
Exactly.
It takes the fewest possible edges on the graph to reach a stable state. That is exactly what this proposed processor is doing. It's not computing the result. It is simply traversing the graph.
What's fascinating here is how it shifts our entire relationship with the concept of computation itself.
You mean?
Well, for decades, Moore's law has driven us to build faster and faster sequential calculators. We've tried to make the recipe read faster, to make the microscopic gear spin quicker, and to shrink the transistors so we can pack more gears in.
But we are hitting the thermal and atomic limits of that approach.
Exactly. This paradigm says, stop trying to spin the gears faster. Just build a better physical track. If you design the geometry of the space correctly, the computation essentially resolves itself.
You get the theoretical mathematical guarantee of the minimum possible operations with 100% precision by simply letting physics and geometry do what they naturally do.
It really is a profound paradigm shift.
Let's recap this journey because we covered some seriously dense theoretical ground today in this deep dive.
We definitely did.
We started with a painfully simple multiplication problem, 3 × 6. But by looking at it through the lens of the XYFLW paradigm, we completely deconstructed and rethought the arithmetic logic unit of a processor.
Which is the beating heart of a computer.
Right. We saw how moving away from a traditional sequential timeline of shift and add instructions and moving toward a two-stage method of geometric projection followed by a single linear sum allows us to hit the absolute mathematical floor of computation.
We achieved our answer in exactly one operation, reaching the theoretical minimum.
And we achieved that efficiency by fundamentally changing where the complexity of the math actually lives, moving it out of the domain of time and into the physical domain of space.
Which leaves us with a pretty wild implication to think about.
Oh, absolutely. If the future of processor design is truly about this moving complexity from sequential instructions into the physical geometry of the hardware's coordinate space, if computation becomes mere traversal of a pre-existing landscape, much like voltage seeking the path of least resistance down a sculpted topological hill.
Right. What does that mean for the software developers of the future?
Exactly. If the hardware is doing the thinking simply by existing in a highly specific physical shape, the role of software fundamentally changes.
Will the programmers of tomorrow still be writing lines of sequential code? Or will they, in a very real practical sense, be sculpting physics?
That is such a wild thought to end on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, everyone. Keep questioning the basic assumptions of how things work, because sometimes the most complex problems don't need a faster processor. They just need a completely different shape. Until next time.